everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Here we are. It's already April 1st, 2014. And I don't have any foolish surprises for you today. I hope you're having a good April Fool's Day, but I think we're going to have a fun but serious show. No tricks, I promise. Okay. This past week I was at the Veggie Pride Parade in Manhattan, which is a really lovely event. It was a little challenging this weekend because we've been having all of this wonderful cold weather, which looks like it's finally inviting a little spring. Hello.
Hello.
Who am I speaking with?
This is Liz Brandon.
Oh, hi. I didn't bring you on the program yet, but okay, let's jump right in it. I'm going to bring on my two guests and talk about my favorite subject for the next half hour, which is kale. And we have here Dr. Elizabeth Brandon from Mississippi College, and she's an assistant professor there in the biology department. And Bilal Kizilbash. How do you say your name, Bilal?
Bilal Kizilbash. You actually said it quite right.
Kizilbash, yes. Well, I'm not going to try and say it anymore. It's a great bunch of letters, and I wish I could use it in Scrabble. And Bilal is a Master of Science candidate in the Biomedical Sciences at Mississippi College. And Bilal and I have a passion for kale, I think. Don't we, Bilal?
Yes, we do.
So thanks for joining me here on It's All About Food. Let's just jump right into the work that you're doing at Mississippi College because it's fascinating. So, Dr. Brandon, would you like to give us a little introduction about your work with kale?
Well, actually, I didn't start working with kale until Bilal joined the lab last year. Because he had not done research before, I let him work with some other graduate students on their research projects. And once he learned some techniques, he came up with an idea of testing the effects of kale juice on melanoma cells. And I said, well, why not? And so I have just recently come to the field, so I'm very new to it. And I have been kind of surprised by the results, and I think it's exciting.
I think it is too. Now, Bilal, I can't even remember when I met you, maybe 2-3 years ago?
Yeah, it was it was close to 2 years ago at this point.
Right. And did you know very much about kale when we first met?
Actually, I knew nothing about kale. It's a funny story how this all began, actually. and that's how most great things start, right?
Yeah.
In regards to the kale, I knew nothing about it. I never even ate kale prior to us meeting. And it was my mother who started doing this whole juicing thing, and she was doing these wonderful fruit juices mixed with some greens like bok choy and whatnot. And she told me, she had me try some of her juices with her, and I was like, wow, this is delicious. It's with strawberry, mangoes, all wonderful things that I've had before, very sweet-tasting juices. And my mom was reading your blog, and she was like, oh, Bilal, you want to try a hardcore juice? And I started laughing because I'm like a guy. So I'm like, yeah, of course, hardcore, let's do it. So she gave me this green juice, and I was like, this tastes awful, and I never want to do it again in my life. This is about 4 days into juicing. However, I noticed something unusual about on the 6th and 7th day. When I went in the shower, I noticed my skin tags were decreasing. It's not only in size and number as well. And skin tags are fundamentally little tumors. They're gene transcription errors. And as my friends and I were growing older, we basically accepted it as a fact of life that we're just going to get more and more skin tags. So we're talking about I was 25 at the time, and a whole lot of my friends ranging from 22 up to 30, all of us as we were getting older were just getting more and more skin tags. So I'm like, okay, why are my skin tags going down? So I started backtracking and thinking about anything new I did in my life at that time. I ate my burger. I didn't really do anything special. And when I started looking back, I was like, oh, it's the juices. So I started asking my mom what she put in the juices, strawberries, mangoes, all sorts of things I've had before, cucumbers, apples, ginger. But what I've never had before was the thing she told me about kale. So I was like, huh, kale is something I've never had before, and I've never had this results before as well. So I started looking into kale, and I couldn't really find a whole lot of scientific research on it in regards to its anti-cancer properties, other than anti-proliferative effects. So at that point, I started looking into forums, and I went to thousands of forums, and I have to tell you, people are really, really vocal when it comes to what they're going through, and you start seeing how the general trend of a lot of them getting better with when they start going to a more natural lifestyle in terms of improving their diet, getting more water, more exercise. But one commonality that I noticed between all the people that actually started getting better and recovering was the common element of kale, which I experienced myself. And I'm like, this warrants further study. But it kind of just fell in the back burner because I wasn't a researcher and didn't really think much of it until, like I said, Dr. Brandon said, when I actually got to a lab and I started doing some work, and I was like, this molecular compound kind of resembles something else. And I was like, maybe this might work. And then we ran with it.
Well, fortunately or unfortunately, I don't know what it is, but when people discover something, but if they don't prove it in a clinical fashion and make it science-based, they don't get a lot of attention. And there's some really valuable information out there. And fortunately, a lot of us can just eat kale. We don't need a prescription for it, and we can discover its benefits. But I think it's the work that you're doing is really important, because I think a lot of people will benefit from it. So let's talk now about what you're doing with kale and the results that you've discovered.
Okay, so to put it very simple, it's a very simple experiment, actually. We took juice curly kale, and we put it directly on the melanoma cells, and it's actually induced apoptosis. And I remember when I first saw it, I was like, this can't be right. So we kept repeating the experiments, and over, I kept seeing cell death. And to help you appreciate this fact, melanoma cells in general are pretty hardy cells. They're pretty tough to kill. So I've been working with kale now for over a year, and I've kind of gotten used to seeing the melanoma cells die because of this. it's kind of funny if you think about it, because it really is that simple, and it's like, it makes you wonder why no one decided to try this before. And there's so many components within kale. There's temporal that has been actually shown to actually induce apoptosis in glioblastoma cells, a type of brain cancer. Then you have molecular iodine that's also present within kale that's been shown to induce apoptosis in human breast cancer cells. And also it doesn't affect normal mononuclear cells. And then you have a ton of other things within kale as well. Some flavonoids that they haven't even named yet. And all these things are working in concert. So basically, let's just talk about three individual components that we could possibly make a new wonder drug. We could take sulforaphane, lecithin, as well as temporal, and probably make the next wonder drug. But then I was wondering, that how about if we go back to nature, where instead of making our own recipe, nature has its own recipe for kale. So let's test that in its natural format, because it's immediately available and it's directly accessible to everyone. And that's how the idea came to be, and that's the experimentation we did and we're continuing to do.
Sounds great. Now, Dr. Brandon, how is it you have the flexibility to do experiments like this? I'm not that familiar, but a lot of times there are grants and there are specific goals that you're looking to achieve.
Sure. Well, I do have a grant, and there are specific objectives that I'm trying to achieve, but because of the broad aims of the program from the National Institutes of Health that funds my grant, I have some room to explore. And the second reason is that Mississippi College is not a research institution. We are primarily an undergraduate college. We do have some master's level programs, but we use research as a teaching tool. It's we teach full time and we do research when we can with students as we can. And our primary goal with introducing students to research is to open their eyes to the possibility of becoming a professional scientist. And I think that exploration is absolutely essential for that, because when people get the chance to discover something new, there's nothing like it. There is no other feeling like that in the world. And you want more of that, and you want to share what you've learned with other people. So I do have money that I can use for projects like this. Bilal is doing the control experiments now with normal non-cancerous epithelial cells, and so hopefully we will have some results with those controls in a couple of weeks. But this research that he's doing is not very expensive. He has the juicer already. He made the juice samples and stored them in frozen vials in the freezer. The melanoma cells are currently being used for other projects in the research lab, and so to me, this is a no-brainer. Why not explore foods like this in their natural form? Because it is the right balance of chemicals that makes these foods so healthy and even palliative or useful for healing in some cases.
Now, with your study on melanoma tumor growth, have you seen results like this, like you've seen with the kale juice?
I have. We have played with the metabolism of melanoma cells, and all cells have flexibility with the fuels that they use. They can oxidize carbohydrates. They can oxidize fatty acids. They can even obviously build the biological molecules that they need. But when cells are stressed out, they can easily switch from one fuel source to another, and that's an adaptive response that all cells have. And cancer cells are no different in this respect. And we found that if we forced cancer cells or our melanoma cells to oxidize pyruvate, then that induced apoptosis in the cells. And the other things that we've been looking at are inflammatory cytokines that may be produced by immune cells, and trying to understand that paracellular communication that occurs between melanoma cells and immune cells or cells like adipocytes. So this kind of BELAS research kind of dovetails with what we are looking at anyway. So it's a nice fit for our lab.
Well, the thing that I noticed when I read the summary is the fact that it's the whole kale or the juice kale that is having the impact that it does. And so often in research, which is funded by pharmaceutical companies, and Bilal mentioned this before, companies want to isolate something so they can put it in a pill and profit from it. And
yeah.
I mean, it looks like a lot of us talk about this all the time, but the whole food is actually the most powerful, beneficial thing we can use.
Right, and it's the least toxic. And so in many cases.
Yeah.
I love that you brought that up, actually, because let's just throw some numbers on that to give you an idea of what's going on. So we started one experiment with 200,000 cells, and by around day four, the regular melanoma cells were at around 4 million cells. So from 200,000 to 4 million, we have the Sonic Hitted, which is a slightly distilled format of the juiced curly kale. Fundamentally, what we did is we Sonic Hitted it with the Sonicator, which is just vibrating it very quickly at over 20,000 hertz to liberate whatever's in the cell membrane into suspension, and then we microfiltered in a 0.22 micron filter. So there were some isolates in that, and that took the 200,000 melanoma cells starting off to, and it went by day four to 700,000. So you can just compare right there an immediate difference between 4 million and 700,000. That was a drastic drop. Now, speaking about the actual natural vegetable repeatedly, I'm talking about, I've been doing this for, well over a year now, repeatedly, the natural vegetable in its whole format, we're talking about just directly from the juicer, consistently dropped the melanoma count to zero. It does it very rapidly, in fact.
Wow.
Yes. So even though the Sonic, which was the still format that we're talking about, sulforaphane, chemprol, quercetin, a whole bunch of other things was in there, but the whole natural vegetable has agonist and antagonistic factors combined in a natural balance. That's wonderful. That continuously kills the melanoma cells down to zero. And this is, like I said, by the day four reading, it was zero. Sonic hitted 700,000, and regular melanoma cells 4 million.
Dr. Brandon, have you started drinking kale juice yet?
Well, I eat kale leaves, so I don't have a juicer, but I like to put kale in my salad, and I think the flavor is good. Bilal gave us some juice samples when he first started juicing, and some of the students in the lab didn't like the flavor very much, and so he blended some pineapple in with it, and it was really good. But I even like the raw kale juice. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it, again, it's one of those things that if you include it in your diet along with a balanced diet with other fruits and vegetables, you know, I think it can be very, very beneficial. And there may be conditions where people want to increase their consumption of kale periodically in order to treat certain conditions that they have. I think obviously the next thing to do is to do an in vivo study with animals using a tumor model to see if the application of kale juice directly to melanoma tumor cells causes regression in the tumor.
Right. So are you planning on doing a study like that?
Well, we don't have the animal facilities at Mississippi College, but we are about 15 minutes away from the medical school where there is a huge research institution. And so I have friends there that would probably be happy to get involved in a project like this. So it
could
extend.
How about human animals?
Well, and that's fine too. You know,
because it's not a toxic treatment, it
right.
can provide people with an instant benefit. I don't like to hear about animal experimentation. I know it goes on
yeah.
all the time, and there's some that's less offensive than others, and I understand
sure.
that's how we operate on currently, but I like testing on people.
Yeah, well, and
that
was the motivation behind Bilal's publication of his research poster and his research results on an open science website so that anybody has access to his research results, and if they're interested in trying kale juice themselves, they can. I think that's a very important thing to do. Oftentimes, it takes so long to investigate something scientifically that by the time the research results are actually published, you know, you've missed a lot of opportunities for people to benefit from what you've learned.
Right. So
yeah, that's why I published my work on the Center for Open Science, as Dr. Brandon said. And actually, speaking about human experimentation, we do actually have it. The people experimenting on themselves, if you read the forum posts, a lot of the people with stage 4 cancer, they're kind of desperate. So you start seeing that they're willing to try almost anything and everything, including some people are ingesting cyanide pills. And it's not a very good type of experimentation, but the people are fundamentally experimenting on themselves at this point. Like I mentioned before, when I was reading through the various blog posting and the forum posting, the common element of kale and people starting to get better. But, however, a lot of the doctors, here's one of the famous quotes that I had happen a lot in one of the forums, that the doctors would tell them that the dark side to the leafy green vegetable, which technically the doctor would be right in regards to blood origin when it comes to, let's say, broccoli or, you could mention a whole, blood origins are common in almost all types of natural products. It's actually highest in soy. So I'm saying, you know, if a doctor's going to tell a patient to be careful of goitrogens, they have to tell them in particular to be careful of soy, so that has the highest level of goitrogens. And guess what? Soy is in almost every processed food out there. So instead of recommending their patients be careful, and their patients are telling the doctor that they're getting better. And the other thing with that is another common thing in the forum posting is the doctors say that it was a psychosomatic effect, which our research kind of shows that it's not actually, not kind of, it doesn't show that it's not a psychosomatic effect, but an actual molecular basis to this.
Well, it's very frustrating to see the arrogance that often comes out from a lot of very reputable, intelligent people, where they don't want to see something that may be so simple and so pure and not connected to a big profit motive.
I don't know. I guess maybe arrogance. I'm not entirely sure if it's all arrogance. Maybe it's more ignorance, because when I spoke to a few doctors about the goitrogen aspect, some of them did tell me, oh, you have to be careful with kale because it can induce goitrogen. And I said, actually, there is some competitive research saying that the molecular iodine actually works competitively against that. But I said, you're right, technically, with people starting gorging on broccoli. That's completely right. You could actually start impairing thyroid function then. But at the in regards to the tail, there's, like I said, there's iodine in it, so it actually ends up acting in an antagonistic fashion to the goiter engine. So if people are really genuinely concerned about goitrogens, I would highly recommend they be careful of processed food more than leafy green vegetables.
Yeah, my understanding is it really isn't a big problem, and if people are aware that the only issue is iodine and making sure that you get enough and you don't have to really consume a lot to get enough, but this goitrogen issue is not significant. And I remember hearing one study of a woman who had some serious problems, and she was eating like 25 pounds of bok choy a day and nothing else.
Oh my gosh!
I mean, yeah, it was really crazy. But you know, that's where you get some of the fears coming out when you have something really extreme.
Yeah.
But in most cases, there's nothing bad that kale could do, and especially when we're comparing it. One, to strengthen our own immune system to prevent disease, and then for those that are in a crisis, to be able to use something like kale juice, and if it's possible to use it instead of some toxic chemotherapy, which we all know with chemotherapy, it's a race between killing the cancer and killing you.
Yeah. Yeah.
We need a better alternative.
Well, we also need a cost-effective alternative. While also speaking about toxicity, almost anything can be toxic, including water. If you take water and you just go nuts with it,
right.
You can actually have a dramatic osmotic effect in the body. So in regards to toxicity, let's say you just went and you rapidly drank, 17 gallons of water. You will probably kill yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason why you wouldn't think of water being toxic. It's like putting a warning label on a water bottle. It may potentially kill you. It could also drown you. But it's depending upon how you use it, as well as the quantity, rate of ingestion. There's so many nuances in there, but the brain automatically regulates itself unless you have a psychosis. So fundamentally, you shouldn't really have an issue unless, like I said, you have a psychosis. So eating kale leaves, to overdose on it, you would have to eat a lot of it, and naturally people get sick of it. I mean, even if you love pizza, you eventually get sick of it. You eat too much pizza, you eat too many hamburgers, let's say you eat 14 burgers, you're like, wow, I do not want any more burgers, I don't want any more pizza, I don't want any more kale. The brain automatically regulates that for you. Now, taking it potentially in a pill form, it would circumvent that. That's when you can potentially get into a real danger issue. Like 25 pounds of bok choy, that's a lot of anything. And let's say even eating 7 pounds of, let's say, a burger, as much as someone might love the burger, you'll eventually get fed up with it. You just can't take any more. Now, we're not getting into the chemical engineering aspect. Let's talk about Doritos. Because a chemical engineer cannot give you that satiety. So you can actually circumvent that. But in terms of natural foods, they don't have any type of specific engineering to avoid that. So naturally, your brain's going to be like, okay, buddy, chill with the kale.
Yeah, well, I think kale is an amazing food, and you're discovering how really wonderful it is, and I look forward to learning a lot more about it. Now, I had asked you a few questions, and I'm going to ask them again because I think what I learned was interesting. So you're using a pretty basic Breville centrifugal juicer for your experiments, right?
Yes. I'm using the Breville Icon.
Okay. And there are lots of different models out there, and many times people will ask me and ask others, you know, what's the best juicer? And there are masticating juicers that actually chew the food, twin gear or single gear. There's the centrifugal kind, and people talk about the cell of the juice actually being destroyed with some kinds versus others. And a lot of people promote the masticating juicer as the best, but it's the gentlest. But you're using a centrifugal juicer, and you've gotten outstanding results with it.
Yes. Well, with the masticating juicer, they're wonderful for several things. It's like a tool. Like you get certain types of hammers that are useful for certain scenarios. The centrifugal juicer works best in particular for kale because it also stimulates the actual, chewing your food really, really finely, and also it activates the sulforaphane within it, which is activated by chewing if you were to chew your food. Now, that's a whole separate issue because most people don't chew their food properly, but this would be this would be stimulating chewing your food really, really, really super well. And also the other thing is time factor, because masticators are much slower, and a lot of people are really, really busy. So the centrifugal juicer just ends up being an excellent balance. You do get some oxidation, but the oxidation actually ends up working to your advantage, like I said, when it comes to kale, because it actively uses a forbane. So there's several different things in that. The reason why I use the Bravel Icon in particular, because it's a little bit more of a pricier model, but it's because I'm working on a cellular level. I needed to have consistency and consistent results. So that's the reason why I decided to go with that. However, when you're just ingesting it, I would imagine a cheaper Bravel model or a cheaper juicer might do the same work, but I can't personally vouch for it because I haven't worked with it. But working with the Icon, it's been consistently very reliable in terms of producing wonderful results.
Who cleans your machine when you're done making the juice?
Sorry, I couldn't hear you say it again.
Who cleans your machine when you're done making the juice?
I do. So it's a long process. Not that long, actually. It's quite easy. It takes proper planning. So I would put a garbage bag in the container so I can just take that out easily and just dump off the pulp and scrubbing it. It takes only maybe like 15-20 minutes to clean it up.
I just bring that up because a lot of people complain about cleaning the machine after making juice.
Oh, no. This was the whole reason why I kind of got a little desperate, because I was juicing kale in bulk. So we're talking about a lot of kale. I'm talking about well over 60 leaves of kale I was doing that time, and that still took me only 15-20 minutes to clean it up after that. So I would imagine most people would probably take 5 minutes cleaning up after themselves. It shouldn't be terribly hard, especially with the design of the Bravel. Like I said, it's very, very well designed.
So we just have a few minutes left. Dr. Brandon, what are the plans with kale in your research in the future?
Well, we are going to try it out on some different cancer cell lines and evaluate its efficacy with those. We're also going to look at the effects of kale on inflammatory cells. So immune cells respond very differently, sometimes very low concentrations of chemicals, and we would like to see how inflammatory cells become activated or become less active in response to exposure to kale juice. So I think that would be really neat.
Absolutely. Well, my understanding is that the cruciferous vegetables, the dark leafy green vegetables, do two things specifically, and I look forward to more science to prove what I'm about to say, but they boost the immune system, but they also help detox and take out things that aren't good for the body. So I would imagine that would definitely be seen in an inflammation type of study.
Yeah, we hope so. And the thing that we'll continue to do is publish the research in an open forum so that anyone has access to our research results.
And actually, in regards to the detoxification, there is actually a study that's confirmed what you're saying in regards to sulfur. It upregulates the smooth endoplasmic reticulum in the liver. So there actually are studies showing that it does aid in the detox. It has detoxifying effects on the body.
Now, the last thing I wanted to mention is my understanding is in terms of a human consuming this food and getting the nutrition, a lot of the nutrition is fat soluble, and it's important to consume a little bit of fat with kale or other similar dark leafy green vegetables. So is there anything like that you might include in your study to see if that improves any of the results?
Well, the solubility is less of an issue simply because those fat-soluble molecules will probably diffuse across the cell membrane. You just have to make sure that you use a low enough concentration so that you don't overdose the cells. But whatever bioactive compounds are there are very effective without the aid of any fatty acid mixtures in the medium or albumin to bind to some of those fat-soluble molecules in the kale juice.
Hmm.
So it's it's already very, very effective. Now, I would say that with the sonicating, the kale juice, the sonication will disrupt the membranes in the mitochondria and the chloroplast, and it's possible that some of the antioxidant molecules are liberated by this mechanical disruption. They're still there. They're just maybe exposed to the aqueous environment so that they have greater access to the cells.
Well, I think this is really very exciting, and I look forward to more work coming out from Mississippi College, from Bilal and Dr. Brandon, and kale. There's nothing kale can't do, right?
Right.
Thank you for joining me. It's all about food.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Okay, go back to work.
All right.
Okay, thank you. Wow, really interesting information there, and I'm a big believer in kale, and I'm even more of a believer now. So let's take a little bit of a break, and I'll be back with my next guest, Richard Schwartz.